Hello and welcome back to Dime a Gems. Thank you so much for joining me today. I am your host, Jacob, and today I am riding solo. I'm quite excited for this episode. This time we're going to be talking about a stadium. I'll be giving it my opinions. It is a stadium review for Chase Field, and this is unlike any other episode we've done except for one. In which Isaac and I went through a bunch of different stadiums that we've been to and kind of gave like our top five or something like that. I should have looked up what the episode number was before I did this, but I didn't. So you could just scroll back through it and it should have a pretty obvious title and you can find it. And, you know, you should probably scroll back and listen to any other episode you haven't listened to either because, you know, it's good stuff. And yeah, if you agree that it's good stuff, I hope you've left us a kind review. If you haven't, please do so. And be sure to like, subscribe, and follow us on Instagram at Diamond Gems Podcast and at Shaped by Sports. You can also check out our website, shapedbysports.com, and visit our YouTube channel, Shaped by Sports. And without further ado, let's just get into this episode. So basically, I just went on a two-week vacation, which is why you didn't get an episode last week. I'm sorry that I didn't give you an episode last week, but I was busy. I had plans to potentially go to the games that I went to last week and just do like a quick little review on my phone after, but you know, it didn't feel right. I didn't really have enough time. I was rushed. There was other things I was trying to do, and I just felt like the episode wouldn't have been as good as it hopefully will be now. And also, just, you know, I was on vacation, so give me a break, okay? Anyways, two-week vacation, we actually did a road trip from starting in Salt Lake City, going down to Bryce Canyon, Zion National Park. We went to the Grand Canyon, stayed in Kanab, Utah there, went to Page, Arizona, saw Horseshoe Bend and Antelope Canyon. And then we made our way down to back to civilization. We went to Phoenix, Arizona. And that is where we find ourselves in this episode when I went to Chase Field. And I will be giving you my update on Chase Field. But first, let's talk a little bit about Phoenix. It was my first time in the city. I didn't really know what to expect other than it would be hot. And it was a big city that had a baseball diamond. And Austin Matthews is from there as well. That's really all I knew. And basically, I learned it is very hot there, extremely hot, way too hot for my liking, personally. It was 37 degrees Celsius, which I don't even know what that is Fahrenheit. I can look it up, I guess, because we do have a lot of American listeners, and I don't want to, you know, isolate you guys. 37 degrees Celsius is 98.6 degrees Fahrenheit. That's pretty hot. Especially for me, you know, I live in Montreal, Quebec, Canada. So it's cold here, in case you didn't know that generally. Our summers are warm, but not hot. And yeah, this was hot. This was the hottest I've ever experienced in my life. And it was crazy. Basically, you're like outside and there was a nice breeze, but the breeze wasn't nice. It was evil. It was like hot air being blown on you, like a blow dryer, just right in your face constantly. I actually don't know if the breeze was better or worse. And the shade provided a little bit of relief, but my God, it was too hot. Too hot for me. Good food, though. They have a lot of good Mexican food in Phoenix because it has pretty high Mexican-American population. So you get some good, authentic Mexican food. I tried some cactus tacos. That was a new thing for me, but unreal. Honestly, the best tacos or Mexican food I've had outside of Mexico. And yeah, so highly recommend food in Phoenix, Arizona. I like the desert-style architecture that they have of the houses. The cactuses were as big as the ones I'd seen in cartoons. It was crazy. They were like probably six times the size of me, which isn't a lot, but still, compared to me, at scale, that's large. The other thing I noticed about the city that was kind of interesting is it is really like widespread, seemingly. Like everything was really far apart and kind of more designed for like drivers and transportation than just somebody walking. We didn't really see anybody walking around outside except for like homeless people. And that's not a knock. That's not a slight. That's just a statement of facts. And also, you know, every big city has its homeless populations. I think that they were just a little more findable in Phoenix because there was really no one else outside other than the people that basically lived outside. So I think that basically what happens is people just go from like air-conditioned house to air-conditioned car, air-conditioned car to their destination that's also air-conditioned, into the air conditioning, do whatever they have to do, back to the air-conditioned car, and then back home. That's the vibes I got from Phoenix, Arizona. And when I read some reviews and stuff online, it seems to be what people do. And the scary thing is that it was only May. This is May. So that's some fun facts about Phoenix from my perspective. And anyways, this widespread, easily drivable, big roads made it really easy to get to the ballpark. We had a ride. Fortunately, my girlfriend Jasmine joined me to go to the game. And her dad, it was a family trip. Her dad actually drove us to the park. And it was perfect. It was so easy. I've never gotten so close to the ballpark with so little traffic. So you obviously have to love that. Public transportation was also right outside. It was cheap. It was literally brought you right to the doorstep of the stadium. And so I think it's probably a good way to get to the ballpark if you don't want to take a car or Uber. But getting to the ballpark was easy. And that's means something because some ballparks, not so easy. Even the Rogers Center in Toronto, unless you live like on the subway line in Toronto, very difficult to get to the game. There's like crazy traffic on the Gardner and everything. Like it's kind of hectic. So I appreciated that about the ballpark. In terms of the location, there was lots of street vendors and just like restaurants and stuff in the area. You could go to like a bar and stuff after if you wanted to. Just seemed like a pretty good setup. It was right downtown, which is always cool. I like when it's in the city core. You don't feel like you have to go way out of the way to get there. And the gates there, like when you actually pull up to the stadium, there's like a nice shaded area. It kind of feels like you're walking on a patio. The safety of the area felt very safe. Didn't feel like a sketchy area or anything like that. So overall, I'm going to give the location an A+. And yes, I am doing grades for several different factors. And then I will probably maybe put that out in a post or something. So another thing that's going to be getting a grade is the food and drink. Obviously, an important factor for many people and a differentiator for ballparks to really set yourselves apart. You should have some good food because people go to the ballpark, they drink beer, and they get hungry, they get the munchies, and you need some good food to chow down on. Well, I can safely report that Chase Field has pretty much everything that you need. They did a great job, it seemed, at representing the regional flavors, which I mentioned is like heavily Mexican food. So like there was a tamale stand, which is cool. I love tamales, discovered a love for them when I was in Mexico earlier this year. Tacos, obviously a staple. Burritos, if you were feeling something sweet, they had churros. They actually have what they call a churro dog, which I think is just a ballpark. I think this, don't quote me on this, but I think it was kind of like a thing that was discovered or created for Chase Field. But it's basically like a bun and a churro inside of it. It's not like a standard hot dog bun. It's like a dessert bun with a churro inside of it. And then you get some like whipped cream and like chocolate drizzle on top of it. So that's, if you have a sweet tooth, that could be for you. Very interesting combination. They had enchiladas and to drink, they had margaritas as well. So you can get some tequila in you if that's what you wanted to do. They also had some like household names like Chick-fil-A, Wetzel's Pretzels, which my girlfriend was excited to indulge in. She had heard about it on podcasts and can report that it did meet her hype. And I had a bit of it too. And I got to say, it's probably the best pretzel I've ever had. Not a huge pretzel guy generally, but like it was good. Cold Stone Creamery, if you want ice cream. It's nice to actually have like good real ice cream at a ballpark. I've gone to so many where they just have like the shitty, just like swirl of like vanilla and chocolate soft ice cream, which, you know, sometimes gets the job done, but it's not the best. Come on. We all know this. You'd rather have good hard ice cream. And they had Cold Stone Creamery. So what more can you want? Additionally, we saw a Hop Valley stand, which is like a craft brewery, I believe, which when I looked it up is actually from Oregon. So kind of weird that they're at Chase Field, but, still craft beer lovers. There's something for you there. Coffee lovers. There's actually a coffee bar there as well, where you could hopefully get some good coffee. We didn't try it, but I don't drink coffee. And, you know, my girlfriend had already had her fix for the day, I guess. But they had their coffee there, and they also had smoothies, which is kind of interesting. And yeah, throughout the whole ballpark as well, there was like a bunch of bars kind of scattered throughout. On the 200 level, we actually found like a food court that had like Grand Canyon Grill. I think there was like a street taco place there or something like that. They called it street tacos. Obviously, it's not street tacos because it was in Chase Field, but still, that's the general concept. Yeah. So overall, I think I got to give food and drink at Chase Field an A. I would say that it's one of the best I've seen for just having a wide variety of food, because outside of like the regional flavors, you also have some staples, some household names, and then you have your ballpark classics, of course, you know, the hot dogs and the nachos and beer, of course, popcorn, stuff like that. You could get all of the regular ballpark stuff with this extra stuff sprinkled in, and that's got to earn you an A. The only way that could have been an A plus for me, I think, is if there was more vegan vegetarian options. If that's something that you include in your diet or like try to do, you would have been a little bit challenged to find something that wasn't kind of like completely meat based. There was honestly like a solid amount of like vegetarian options, I'd say, but from a vegan perspective, I'm not actually a vegan, so don't take that that way. But like if you were vegan, I think you probably would have struggled to find something. But honestly, that's kind of like the case, seemingly, in the majority of American cities I've been to. So, you know, I guess they just kind of know their audience. I don't know. But overall, A still. I'm giving it an A. And another reason I'm not giving it an A plus is because the next place I went to, which will come out in the next episode, I'm gonna keep it a secret, but it was an A plus. It was the best I've ever seen. And so this is just a smidge behind it. So A for food and drink. Let's move on to ballpark attractions. So what I mean by ballpark attractions is kind of things outside of the game and the actual like seating area where you watch the game that are going to bring people to the park or provide some level of like extra interest and just kind of entertainment for you when you're, say, there early, or the game is an absolute blowout and you want to go entertain yourself some other way. The number one recommendation I think I would have if you're at Chase Field is check out the Diamondbacks Hall of Fame. This is the official D-backs Hall of Fame, and they put it right in the stadium. This for me is great. I really think that every team should have their Hall of Fame, because pretty much every team has like their own Hall of Fame, right? Just put it right in your ballpark, you know? Make it like just this kind of big thing that anyone can just go and check out. And, you know, like the Blue Jays, again, this, in case you're new to the podcast, this is the first time listening. I'm a Blue Jays fan. Sad to say right now with the way things are going for the team and how annoying and how laughable they have been. But it is reality. There is no Blue Jays Hall of Fame in the Rogers Center, aka the Sky Dome. All they have right now is the level of excellence, which is a ring of names that's viewable from your seat in the ballpark. But you never know. They're making a lot of changes. We'll see if they add something. But anyways, I got a little off track there. The Diamondbacks Hall of Fame was super interesting. As a lot of people probably know, they are the youngest team, along with the Rays. They both came in as an expansion franchise in 1997. I believe that's off the top of my head, and I'm pretty sure it's right. So, if I'm off by like a year or something, please don't come for me in the comments. I didn't Google that. That's just memory. It was really cool though. Even despite them being one of the youngest franchises in the MLB currently, they have an interesting history. They won a World Series in 2001. And this, basically, when you go into the Hall of Fame, you'll see that they actually have the World Series trophy from that year just sitting there on display. It's really cool to see that up close. They also had, like, in that display, it was like a whole World Series display. They also had, like, the lineup cards from each game. They had like some bats and game used gloves and photos, signed photos, baseballs. They had like the newspaper from that day. I thought it was really interesting the way they put that together. I just thought it was really interesting to see. Another interesting thing that they had was in the rafters, they had like these little kind of mini banners that were hanging down that had every all-star for the franchise in their history. So, for example, like Randy Johnson was there, and it had, you know, the amount of times he'd been an all-star. They also had like Jake Lamb, who was an all-star 1 year for them. Just guys like every all-star was included, and it honestly looked pretty cool just hanging down from there. We also saw some like personal awards, like personal player awards, like Randy Johnson had one of his Cy Youngs there. Gerardo Parra had a gold glove. There was another gold glove. Can't remember who it was, though. A couple silver sluggers, one of which from the Blue Jays legend Aaron Hill. Shout out Aaron Hill. Also noticed there was a bunch of Blue Jays legends actually in the rafters. You had Orlando Hudson, who's a personal favorite of mine. Robbie Ray, Devon White, and the legend again, Jake Lamb, was also in the rafters. You might not realize he was a Blue Jay. I think he was there for like half a season. Kind of forgettable time for him in Toronto, but nonetheless, a Blue Jays legend. What else did I see there? They had some WBC stuff, which is cool. They obviously were a host stadium for the WBC this season, and so they had some interesting stuff from that. Also, one of the cool things, when he came, as soon as you went in, they had like on the wall, it was just painted or like a decal or something like that, but they had like the D-backs logo history and like their colors and stuff, which I always love. I'm a big nerd for the design of jerseys and logos and all of that type of stuff. So to see it play out was cool. And also, I am a big fan of the D-backs branding, mostly their older stuff, like the purple and teal, but I do kind of like some of their new stuff as well. So it was kind of cool to see the timeline of that. They also had on the wall, like basically this big banner. It was, again, a decal or paint, but it looked like it was on a banner, and it was basically all of the team leaders in like the categories for them over the course of their franchise history. So very interesting to see that. I'm also curious like how frequently they actually have to update stuff like that. But it was really cool to see. So definitely, if you go to Chase Field, I'd highly recommend checking out the D-backs Hall of Fame. Another thing that people are pretty familiar with, I think, maybe you're not, there's a pool in right center field. It's like the only place other than Tropicana that has a pool for rays. It's like a ray tank. There's actually a pool that you can swim in at Chase Field, and I think that's a pretty unique and interesting thing to have in a ballpark. And honestly, like, you'd think sometimes people, like, they put stuff in just to have it there, and it's kind of like this tacky thing. I don't think that was the case with the D-backs pool. I honestly think that it's like kind of aesthetically pleasing, matches the vibe of the place, just kind of blends in. It doesn't look like an eyesore or anything like that. Now it comes at a price tag. The unofficial price I found for renting out the pool suite is $4,750 US for a game, and it accommodates up to 35 people. So if you could pull together your 35 closest friends, that would be $135 a person. And honestly, like, it's a pretty cool experience, I think. It's actually, fun fact, shaped like a snake. I could really see that from overhead. It's like kind of the neck a little bit of the body, and then like the diamondback shaped head. Thought that was a cool little touch that they did. But yeah, like with the crazy heat of Phoenix, I think it'd be like a cool way to just like stay cool and like watch the ball game. And when can you ever watch a baseball game from a pool unless you have like a suite house that has a pool in the backyard and you have a TV or something like that, you know? But still, not the same experience. Watch a live ball game in front of you from a pool, that sounds pretty cool to me. You actually have really good field views from where it's situated. And I think that renting it would be a really cool experience, kind of unlike anything else. So that's pretty cool. Even just to go by and like check it out and be like, yeah, that's a pool right there is kind of interesting. Shout out to the security guard that let me go past the railings just to take a quick video of it for my reel. So go check that out. You know, go check out the reel. I'm probably going to post that to kind of promote this episode a little bit and show off the ballpark. So check that out at Diamond Gems Podcast. And yeah, what else did I write down here? Oh, team stores. I thought I'd make a quick mention of them. Quite standard, completely adequate. Have pretty much anything you need in terms of ballpark gear. Another cool little addition was that they had a large selection of like authentic game used memorabilia that you could purchase. They had it was like an actual dedicated store called D-backs Authentics. And if you're looking for like some autographed merch or like game used baseballs, game used bats, jerseys, all of that kind of stuff, you can find that in that store. And the interesting thing about it, obviously, is there's some like one of a kind pieces in there. So it's like the stock will always be fresh. You can always go back and there will probably be something new that you didn't see in there before. And even if you're not going to buy anything, it's just cool to see some of that stuff. So another place that's worth checking out, if you ask me. Overall, the ballpark attractions get an A- for me. I think that obviously the Hall of Fame is great. Loved that. The pool is cool, but it's like you have to pay almost $5,000 to actually use it. So it's not really an accessible attraction for people. So it gets an A- overall for me. I still think that like walking around the concourse, like with the food options, the bars, the like social components that they had, the Hall of Fame, and just checking out the pool and stuff like that, I think it's still a really cool ballpark experience. And A- for ballpark attractions. All right. Now, this is something I feel like I didn't even mention this. This is ballpark number 20 for me at this point. And a lot of them I went to when I was kind of young. And obviously, your memory can kind of be a little bit spotty here and there, but I feel like the things that I genuinely remember the most are like the field of play and spectator experience that you got from the seat. Those are the things that kind of have stuck with me, and I definitely have not forgot the kind of like scenic points of a ballpark, or just like, you know, just what it's like to sit down and actually take in the field and the game. So to me, this is where Chase Field starts to lose some points. Obviously, I've got an A minus, an A, and what else did I give it? An A plus for location. It's not going to be as high once we get into the field of play here. Unfortunately, it is just kind of a little boring, if we're being honest. Some of the things that I did like, the interesting fence and field dimensions. I already knew about it on TV, but seeing it in person, their corners are like kind of weird. The big four, I think it's 408 dead center or something like that, but it's like a pretty high wall. It's like kind of interesting field dimensions. It's cool to see how much like just changing up the fence and the dimensions can actually have an impact. But I found that kind of interesting. You can see into the bullpens. There's seats that are like right behind the bullpens in the outfield, which I think is always interesting to like, if you're sitting close to actually see pitchers warming up and stuff like that, and just see guys moving around in there. I've always thought that's kind of an interesting thing to include. So that's a pro. The pool area, as I mentioned, looks kind of cool to see it out in the outfield. And as far as I could tell, there was no obstructed views from really anywhere in the ballpark. As to be expected, you know, the stadium's not that old. It's the one ballpark they've had since like 97 or 96, maybe the ballpark was built. But yeah, the vantage points, like you weren't missing any of the game. You didn't have any blocked views. So that's obviously a pro. And it's the foul territory is not that expansive. So you're pretty close to the field of play. And again, that's another good thing. The things I didn't love so much include, like, it's kind of just like a dimly lit ballpark. The whole park just kind of felt a little dark. Even when you were in the concourse, the main areas, it did feel dark. And that carried out when you went into the field as well. It's kind of interesting because it was a very bright day outside. The roof was closed. For those of you who don't know, it's a retractable roof. It can open and close. It was closed on the day I was there due to the heat. And they have pretty like large windows and that are supposed to allow light in, but it really just didn't seem like there was a ton of natural light that was flowing in, or at least the natural light that was coming in was kind of overshadowed by like the stadium lights, and it just felt kind of dim and dark in there. And I don't know if that's necessarily what you're looking for when you're going to a day game for baseball. Part of it, though, is like they had these really large squares on the... So basically, like in the outfield, above the seats and everything, there's these large panels of glass that are supposed to allow light in. But on those large panels of glass, they had these really big like squares of... With ads on them. And if you want to go check out my reel again, you'll probably see that in the video that I share. But that was a big downside to me because the ads were honestly like an eyesore. I am, you know, we get bombarded with marketing nowadays. I'm a marketing guy also, so I'm a little hypocritical here. But we get so bombarded with ads and everything these days. And it just seemed so overkill, and it seemed like it was blocking the view. I don't know what those panels, if they were like that before ads went up there, or if they were specifically put up there for ads, but the amount of ads in the outfield was kind of an eyesore to me, and felt like it might have been blocking light coming in, honestly. They're these big, dark panels, no lights passing through them. I don't know if it was just me, if that was a necessary component of the structure, but I didn't like that. What else did I have here? There's like no view when you're inside. There's no view of the surrounding area of the ballpark. You pretty much are locked into the stadium that you're in. And, you know, when you go to places like PNC or in Cleveland, actually, at Progressive Field, there's a good view of like their skyline. Petco is great as well. There's a bunch of stadiums basically that have like a scenic backdrop. You know, you can see the city and or bay or water or whatever area, whatever the surrounding area might be, you can see that. And it really helps to, I feel like, connect you with the city and the area that you're in, to see that. And you didn't get any of that at Chase Field. You were really just like locked in to the field. On top of that, there's a lot of like clunky metal pieces in the rafter that are just kind of visually unappealing. And overall, it was just kind of an boring vantage point from a spectator's standpoint. So for that reason, and it's not horrible. Like, don't get me wrong. It wasn't like, oh my God, this is hideous. It was just like, it just wasn't that exciting. So for that reason, I'm going to give it a C-. And the last thing I want to touch on in terms of scoring this ballpark is the vibe and the atmosphere. This is obviously like a less tangible thing to critique, but I still think it's very real. There's just a feeling. Anybody that's been to a baseball game and that is a true baseball fan knows that you go to the diamond and there's just a different feel. It's part of the reason that you go and watch the games live, is to be a part of it. It's to take it all in. It's to feel like you are part of like a community. And so this vibe and atmosphere that you're picking up on is a very real thing. And it's very different as someone that's been to a lot of stadiums. I can assure you it is very different based on where you go. You get different vibes from different places. The way that fans interact with one another, the way they interact with the ball club is always different. And in terms of that vibe at Chase Field, I would say, you know, there was some chatter. Fans were generally into it when there was action plays. It seemed like people were genuinely watching the game and interested in what was happening on the field. But it wasn't anything exceptional. I feel like there was almost more of a vibe like in the hallways and concourse areas with people chatting and like taking in the food and you know, hanging out at bars and stuff. But you know, when you went into the stadium, it was not really anything spectacular. They kind of had this fun dance that they did. It was the dorkiest, like, worst dance I've ever seen in my life. But they basically just put up on the screen, they're like, do the dance. And if you're watching on video, you'll see me do the dance now. But you basically just like pump your fists up and down in the air in an alternating fashion. And that's the dance. And it was really dorky, but kind of fun. I like when they have like quirky kind of things like that. So that was like the one kind of unique little dance or inside thing, I guess, that they had. We saw a walk-off win from former Blue Jays legend Lourdes Gurriel. The crowd was extremely excited about that. It was pretty fun. The place got pretty loud, even though I think that the crowd was probably about like 20,000, 25,000 maybe, if I'm guessing. I didn't actually look up the attendance for that day. It was a Sunday afternoon. Yeah, and Lourdes Gurriel walked it off, and it was pretty fun. But that energy honestly didn't last that long. It seemed like kind of as soon as it happened, people cheered, gave each other some high fives and stuff like that, and then they were out of there. We kind of lingered a little bit longer because we saw Lourdes actually like getting set up for a post-game interview. And at a lot of the ballparks we go to, it's kind of a more recent thing, I think, but they will broadcast like the interview live on like the Jumbotron and through the speakers of the stadium so that the fans that are still hanging there can like hear what they're saying in the interview. And unfortunately, they didn't do that. Like, they didn't broadcast it to the fans in the stadium. So we just kind of waited and then realized that the interview was rolling and we weren't hearing it. So then we left. So it kind of caused people to empty out quickly and disperse fast. And then, like I mentioned, like the heat is so crazy in Phoenix that people basically go outside. Sometimes like after a game, you go outside and like there's all the fans are there. There's still the chatter and like buzz from the game. But that didn't really happen in Phoenix because it was just too hot. People literally went like straight to public transit, straight to their cars, straight home. So overall, I'm going to give it a C for vibe. It's not a failing grade, but we saw pretty much like the most exciting game that you can see in terms of like going to a game in May. And it was fun during the action, but it wasn't anything that really like stuck with me. Like, I'm not going to tell people moving forward that, you know, you got to go to Chase Field. It's just a different vibe down there. That's really not the case. Like, it was one of the more average kind of basic crowds that I've been a part of. And, you know, everything is completely, this is just my opinion. You could have obviously gone on a different day and had a different experience. If you're a Diamondbacks fan, I'm sure that goes to multiple games. I'm sure there's like inside things that I did not pick up in my one experience at Chase Field. So please do not be offended by what I'm saying. This is obviously not gospel. So, yeah. But that is how I feel. So overall, we got a C for vibe. We got a C minus for the field of play and spectator experience. The ballpark attractions get an A minus. The food gets an A, and the location gets an A plus. I guess that's the end. Overall, I guess I'll just give a couple final thoughts. A good place to watch a ball game. If I was a resident of Phoenix, I would definitely still be attending several games a year. And it's a decent park, good place to watch a game, but not going to crack my top 10, that's for sure. It'll probably be in the, I don't know. I still have basic, so this was number 20. I went to 21, so I have 9 stadiums left to visit. I think it's probably going to be in my bottom 10, if I'm being honest, but I'll have to break it down and actually give an updated list. But again, bottom 10 isn't that, it sounds worse than it actually is, because there's just so many amazing ballparks out there that you really have to have like a really exceptional product to crack the top 20. So don't take it personally. I actually took public transit home from the game. We actually walked to a taco shop and then took public transit from there. But the bus driver was talking to me, asked if I went to the game. I said yes, and he let me know. I told him about like the stadium tour that I've been doing and stuff like that. And he said, you know that like they're talking about making a new ballpark, right? Like the fans want a new ballpark. Did not know that. Apparently people think that Chase Field is outdated and it's time for a new stadium. Truthfully, I don't really know how much better you can make. The fact is, we went when the game was, or when the roof was closed, and I'm sure that when the roof is open, it's a better feel in the park. But you have to consider that it's Phoenix, Arizona in the summer. Like, it's going to be, they're going to have to do a indoor stadium or a at least like retractable roof, as they already have, and that kind of boxes you in a way. And I don't know how much of the surrounding area they'll be able to showcase. Didn't even look like Phoenix had like a crazy skyline or anything like that when we were there. So I don't even know what you could really put in the background. It just kind of seems like this stadium is what this area needed. And I don't know how much you can actually improve on it other than changing what's inside the park. So I do think it's a bit of an overreaction and a bit dramatic to say that you need a new stadium. I think it's an adequate ballpark. So I'll leave it at that. Thank you so much for listening. If you liked this episode, please be sure to like, subscribe, leave a kind review. Follow us on Instagram at Shaped by Sports and at Diamond Gems Podcast. And check out our YouTube page for video content. That is Shaped by Sports. That's the channel. Subscribe to it, and check us out coming up with the next episode. We'll also be a stadium review. I'll say it now, it's Petco Park in San Diego.